Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
As the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passes the 1,000 mark, the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions sent a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister yesterday condemning the wave of hostage-taking and killing of migrant workers. The number of foreign workers killed in Iraq since March 2003 jumped at the end of August following the videotaped killing of 12 Nepalese and 3 Turkish workers. In addition, recent kidnappings of 2 Italian foreign relief workers were also condemned by the organization and has led many aid groups to consider pulling out. Earlier this month, 7 truck drivers from the countries of India, Kenya, and Egypt were released by their captors, but only after their employer paid a ransom the equivalent of $500,000. In the letter, the ICFTU said that more than 20 workers are currently being held hostage, and the group has called upon the Iraqi government to provide better security for workers of all nationalities.
1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just 2 votes, with 5 Republicans supporting the Democrats. Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Workers at a Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois, have until next Wednesday to volunteer for a severance package, or they could face layoffs. The automaker intends to cut the factory's second shift and lay off about 1,200 workers on September 24th. The severance package will pay 80% of the volunteer's salary for up to 70 weeks. Remaining layoffs will be determined by seniority. The Japanese company has been facing a 36% decrease in worldwide sales. The Illinois plant is Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It pays to be a political contributor. According to United for a Fair Economy, CEOs of the 69 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay increase by 52% in 2003. Also, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either Bush or Kerry earned an average of $15.2 million in 2003, 88% more than the average large company CEO.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
It's always a hoot to hear corporate lobbyists wailing to the high heavens about the scourge of frivolous lawsuits, demanding that Congress bar people from suing them. But guess who files the biggest number of frivolous lawsuits in America? Corporations. They sue their competitors, consumers, shareholders, critics, the media, public interest groups. They'll sue their own mama just to squeeze out another dime. For an example of litigious corporate absurdity, come to Lavernia, Texas, and hoist a cool one with the good folks who are regulars at the True Blue Texas Roadhouse. Located 25 miles east of San Antonio, this rural bar serves up beer, chips, country music, and genuine Texas atmosphere. It's in a corrugated metal building that used to be a garage. It's the real deal. But the True Blue Texas Roadhouse has been sued by the corporate lawyers of a national restaurant chain calling itself Texas Roadhouse. This outfit, which operates 165 restaurants in 30 states, wrote to Doug Bodie in Lavernia, claiming that Bodie's Texas True Blue Texas Roadhouse was violating the chain's trademark name and, get this, deceiving the consuming public into thinking this little bar in Lavernia is part of the chain. Now, get this. The chain has no Texas roots whatsoever. It began in Indiana and is headquartered in Kentucky. It dresses up its bars with Texas memorabilia, but it's a fake, profiting on the good name and spirit of genuine Texas roadhouses. Texas is where we live, says one of Bodie's regulars, which is way more than the plastic chain can claim. Bodie himself says, I'm just trying to make a living. For God's sake, I'm a Texas bar. Why can't I use that name? This is Jim Hightower saying, well, why can't he? If you'd like to tell the national chain where to go and tell it to leave Lavernia's genuine roadhouse alone, call the CEO, 502-426-9984.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org and, of course, at tomhartman.com, where you can also drop into our chat room, already filling up. It's Friday, and the first hour of our program. Time for Congressman Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Sanders, in 1991, became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years, the United States House of Representatives. He has since been reelected five times, the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, a gentleman I think of as America's congressman, not just Vermont's Bernie Sanders. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Or welcome to your program. This hour of it is this is really Brunch with Bernie. Now, Bernie, let's talk about the elections here. It's just general madness seems to be reigning. I know a lot of Democrats, progressives, Greens, folks who are supporting Kerry. I mean, the
from the anybody but Bush to the enthusiastic about Kerry, that whole part of the spectrum. Some of them are a little spooked by these poll numbers and things. And, you know, what are your thoughts on what's happening with the campaign?
Not the case. I think there's no question that Bush got a bounce from the Republican convention. I think most experts now see it as a reasonably small bounce. If, in terms of the Electoral College vote, it is very, very close today. And some of the recent polls show that Kerry is now within a point or two of Bush. But the issue here, and what concerns me very much about what's happening in the campaign, is that progressive-type people who want Kerry to win, who want to defeat Bush, have got to reach out to swing voters, to people who are uncertain about who they are going to vote for. Doesn't do us any good to get people who are anti-Bush all hopped up and demonize Bush and all that stuff. Our job is to win this election, not just talk to each other. And I think, Tom, there are a lot of issues out there, obviously. But I think the most salient issue, the issue that resonates most with ordinary people, is the very simple and decent question that Ronald Reagan, remember Ronald Reagan, he asked in 1980.
Yeah.
And what was that question?
Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
That's it.
Yeah.
And if you ask that question to the average person in the middle class, there is no answer other than the fact that we are a lot worse off today than we were 4 years ago. We are losing jobs, losing jobs. This guy will be the first president since Herbert Hoover to have actually ended up with less jobs than when he started. That is disgraceful. Equally important, people are very anxious about this, not only in Vermont, but all over this country. We are losing, by and large, good-paying jobs. The new jobs that we are creating are lower-paying jobs. 16% of our manufacturing jobs gone in the last 3 years alone, since Bush has been in office, because of our disastrous trade policy. Just very recently, Bush promulgated new rules that would eliminate overtime pay for 6 million workers.
Now, there was an interesting vote on that in the, House and the Senate. Before you tell us about that, let me just toss the phone lines open here. If you'd like to call, if you have a question for Congressman Sanders, thoughts, ideas, suggestions, comments, arguments, whatever, 1-866, one of those new toll-free, newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Now, Congressman Sanders, Bernie, you're...
Well, in terms of this overtime proposal, which is an outrage, because we have millions of Americans who are totally dependent upon the time and a half that they get after 40 hours just to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And Bush's proposal would eliminate overtime for 6 million American workers. Now, the good news is, and maybe it's because it's election time, I don't know, but just yesterday, in the House of Representatives, with a very strong vote, almost every aye and every Democrat voted to stop those regulations and stop the elimination of overtime. And we were joined by 22 Republicans, and we won a very strong vote. Now, the Republican leadership is saying, well, yeah, so what? You want it in the House, but that doesn't mean to say it's going to survive in conference committee. So the way things work is... the leadership controls what takes place because the House and Senate are both controlled by Republicans. They can take out that provision and leave these rules in. But we're going to work as hard as we can to protect overtime pay for millions of American workers.
It's really remarkable, isn't it, how our system, which was designed to be an adversarial system, to have, you know, at least two points of view in there, really works best when it is adversarial.
Well, what's happening now, and again, it gets back to the point I think that should be the theme of this election. You have a right-wing president, Republican. You have extreme, even more to the right than Bush, leadership in the House. You have conservative leadership in the Senate. These guys have to take responsibility for what's happening to the middle class. There's nobody else to blame. So not only are they attacking overtime, look at what's happening to real inflation accounted for wages for the average American worker. They fell 1.1% in June, which was the steepest decline in real hourly wages since 1991.
Yeah.
So real wages, people are having to work longer hours just to make ends meet. And for lower income workers, it is a total disaster. Incomes of the lowest wage earners in America are down almost 8% since 2000. So I think these are the issues, the issue of the disintegration of our health care system, the fact that Bush wants to raise Medicare premiums by 17% for the elderly, which means that it's going to be very, very hard for millions of elderly people who are living on low incomes to deal with this.
Yeah. That these are much more important than whether or not George Bush served in the Air National Guard.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah. You know, what bothers me, and you know, we're reliving the Vietnam War. I think the attacks against Kerry are lies. I think there's some reasonable questions about what Bush did or did not do when he was in the National Guard. But you know what? That ain't the important issue. The important issue is what's happening to ordinary people today. We don't have to fight the Vietnam War over again. What we have to do is focus. What about your health care? You're an average American out there? You're doing good? Well, probably not. We have lost close to 5 million people have lost their health insurance since Bush has been president. Just the report you saw came out last week. Insurance premiums are up by 11%. I think that's the fourth year in a row. We've seen double-digit insurance rate increases. Unsustainable. 45 million Americans without health insurance. Bush wants to privatize Medicare. Social Security. Tom, you heard our friend Alan Greenspan a few weeks ago. He said, well, deficit is getting very high. That's true. He helped get it high by supporting Bush's tax breaks for the rich. $7 trillion national debt. Yeah. Well, what are we going to have to do with Social Security? Says Mr. Greenspan, well, obviously, we're going to have to raise the retirement age. We're going to have to cut back on COLA. This will be Bush's position. No question about it, to my mind.
Yeah.
So I think you just add, talk about the economy, talk about health care, talk about how George Bush is working night and day with the pharmaceutical industry to stop those of us in Congress who want to lower the cost of prescription drugs. He is opposing us in the effort to bring safe, affordable medicine into the United States from Canada and Europe.
Yeah, it's
if you focus on those issues and you keep asking the American people, hey, are you doing well? Are you optimistic about the future for your kids? What kind of new jobs are going to be there for your kids? Well, there was a Bureau of Labor Statistics study that came out a few months ago. 7 out of 10 fastest-growing professions will require only a high school degree, low wages, minimal benefits. Is that what we want for our children and grandchildren?
Yeah.
If we stay on these issues and reach out to working people, middle-class people, veterans, you know what? We're going to win this election.
Yeah, I believe you're right. The key is going to be to keep that focus and keep it laser-tight.
That's right. And the media and Bush will do everything that they can to deflect attention from those issues.
Right, yeah. I just got a conservative alert this morning. There's a new flag-burning amendment coming before the Senate tomorrow.
That's right.
Anyhow, let's go to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ron in Tucson, Arizona is on the line. Hey, Ron, welcome. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Bernie. Ron Faber, and I just want to ask you a fast question. I think Democrats, and I think most of the average guys out there in the street, are missing the real war. And I think the real war is being fought here in America, and it's fundamentalism versus secularism. I just see their whole agenda is so steeped in religious right-wing evangelicalism that everything else is being sacrificed to win that war. And I'd like to hear you comment on that.
Well, that's
okay,
a good question.
I'll get off
Ron.
And let you comment. Thanks.
Let me answer it in two ways. I thought what you were going to say is that the real war is the war against the middle class of America, which I think is certainly the case now. Our middle class is getting battered. But I also think you're right in saying that Bush and some of his friends have reached the conclusion that the only people who believe in God, the only people who have moral values or family values, are right-wing Republicans. And I think that that's outrageous, and I think progressives have got to take them on. To my mind, it is not a moral value to give tax breaks to the richest people in this country when we have seen an increase in hunger in America and homelessness and poverty. I don't think that that is a moral value. It is not a moral or religious value, in my view, when credit card companies protected by the president and the Republican leadership are charging working people 25 or 30% interest rates. So I think we have got to rethink what morality means in America. And morality means that we reach out to people who are in trouble, to ordinary people who are trying to bring up their kids, send their kids to college, and do not give the mantle of morality to these right-wingers.
Yeah, and this John Kerry started that yesterday in the speech that he gave, in which he said that Bush was like the was not being like the Good Samaritan. He was being like the people who preceded him, walking by the guy on the, you know, the wounded, injured guy on the road in the biblical story. And it's I think reclaiming that. This is the Matthew 25 conundrum for Christians, because it's the only place in the New Testament where Jesus actually says, here's what you have to do to get into heaven. And he says, feed the poor, clothe the naked, visit those in prison, feed the hungry, take in strangers, and it's certainly not what is being done by these guys. Anyhow,
and I think Ron makes a very good point. To be religious, to be moral, trust me, the right wing in this country does not have ownership of those issues by any means, and in almost every instance on the wrong side of those issues.
But and yet they proclaim it. They constantly proclaim it. It's absolutely mind-boggling. We've got about 30 seconds here, Bernie, before we've got to take a break. The lines are full, but I didn't want to bring a caller on with only 20 seconds to go. But do you think very quickly that this race is going to tighten up very quickly here, or do you think that the debates are going to play? I mean, what do you see as the milestones?
As you may have read, let's hope that the president is prepared to debate.
Yeah.
You know, we have a guy, the really tough guy. He's just Mr. Macho, but apparently some of his handlers are saying that maybe he doesn't want to go three debates with Mr. Kerry.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope he has the courage to do that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Three rounds, I don't know, mano a mano. We'll find out. 20 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Friday afternoon brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman radio program. 20 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. This is our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Ken in Alabama is on the line. Hey, Ken, where in Alabama are you located?
Well, right now I'm just a little bit north of Montgomery.
Oh, okay, great. So you're on live with Congressman Sanders.
Well, I've got a real quick question. I'm going to ask it and get off, and that way Bernie can answer it. My wife and I both agreed that it sounded like he said something and it didn't make a lot of sense to me. To both of us, it sounded like he said they're going to cut back on cola. I'm sure he's not talking about the drink. She thought he was talking about Cobra, which I'm not familiar with.
So I'm sorry, cola.
Probably not that familiar with Cobra. I thought he might explain it to the listeners
I'm sorry, Ken. What I meant is that what Alan Greenspan suggested is that we should begin the process of cutting back on the cost of living allowances, COLA. That's a COLA, which is the inflationary increase that seniors get in Social Security every single year. So one way that Greenspan suggested we could save money is to cut back on that, which would mean a lowering of Social Security benefits for seniors.
Uh-huh. Okay. Makes sense. Makes sense. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Ken.
Sorry.
No problem. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Congressman Sanders, thank you for talking to me here for a second. I agree with you that it's all about economics. But it's like everything else that the Democrats are doing, or the independents or the progressives or liberals. I think we've got to focus on what we can sell. And, you know, what we hear a lot, Bush says, or Karl Rove actually probably says, is, well, we got a war going on, we got to make sacrifices, but over the next 4 years, that's when we're going to start getting, you know, the anti-terrorism dividend and what have you and all these other lies. And we know we're going to end up worse off in 4 years, but it's amazing the number of people that just don't believe it. So what I've been doing, and this is where I take issue with you, is I call his war record into account because it proves him to be a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, oh, really, he said that? Well, what did he say about this? Oh, and we're in wartime
Chuck,
now.
Chuck, let me just toss one thing in here. Today's Paul Krugman and Bernie. Have you seen the New York Times, Paul Krugman's comment?
I did.
Yeah, you know, he makes the point that it's not whether or not Bush served, and it's not even whether or not way back then Bush did something that was arguably a screw-up. You know, as Kerry has said that he regrets some of the things that he said after he came back from Vietnam. It's whether last week Bush was lying to us, because the Bush campaign just released a whole bunch of documents that they had claimed had been released years ago, and that they had claimed then 6 months ago that they had released, and you know they released them right after the 60 Minutes thing. They finally fessed up. It's like the cover ups are continuing. So I guess you know, Bernie.
Tom, and I think that Chuck makes a good point. You remember Al Franken wrote a book, and I thought it was a really good book. And what he's tried to say is, look, honest people can disagree about issues. But a lot of these right-wing people, including Rove and friends, lie a whole lot. Many people remember what Bush and Rove did to John McCain in South Carolina in the last election. They lied and lied and lied about him, his personal life, his war record, vicious lies. And that is something that we're up against. We've got to expose it as strongly as we can. So I'm not arguing with that. Yeah. But I think also we have to reach out to middle-class people and ask them objectively how they are doing today compared to 4 years ago and where they want to go in the future.
Yeah, and stay on point with that message, always coming back to it.
But, you know, Chuck makes a very good point. There's a lot of lying going out there which has to be dealt with.
Yeah, and I think that's one that's, you know, Kerry's not apparently perpetuating lies. He's you know, you can argue whether you like what he did years ago, but that's what he did.
No, I think this whole business about his service in Vietnam is and the attacks that have come his way are an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, and specious, absolutely specious. It's in my opinion, but you know, of course, I think. Well, we'll see how it all shakes out. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, on with us for this entire hour. Stick around, we'll be right back.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
As the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passes the 1,000 mark, the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions sent a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister yesterday condemning the wave of hostage-taking and killing of migrant workers. The number of foreign workers killed in Iraq since March 2003 jumped at the end of August following the videotaped killing of 12 Nepalese and 3 Turkish workers. In addition, recent kidnappings of 2 Italian foreign relief workers were also condemned by the organization and has led many aid groups to consider pulling out. Earlier this month, 7 truck drivers from the countries of India, Kenya, and Egypt were released by their captors, but only after their employer paid a ransom the equivalent of $500,000. In the letter, the ICFTU said that more than 20 workers are currently being held hostage, and the group has called upon the Iraqi government to provide better security for workers of all nationalities.
1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just 2 votes, with 5 Republicans supporting the Democrats. Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Workers at a Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois, have until next Wednesday to volunteer for a severance package, or they could face layoffs. The automaker intends to cut the factory's second shift and lay off about 1,200 workers on September 24th. The severance package will pay 80% of the volunteer's salary for up to 70 weeks. Remaining layoffs will be determined by seniority. The Japanese company has been facing a 36% decrease in worldwide sales. The Illinois plant is Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It pays to be a political contributor. According to United for a Fair Economy, CEOs of the 69 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay increase by 52% in 2003. Also, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either Bush or Kerry earned an average of $15.2 million in 2003, 88% more than the average large company CEO.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders on the line. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. 866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Sanders, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Regarding this concept of universal health care, I just wonder, Bernie, if you find it ironic that the real conservative folks, people like Tom DeLay, for instance, and maybe George Bush, too, would say, well, we can't have universal health care. It's too expensive, and it's even, and here's the horrible word, socialistic. However, correct me if I'm wrong, but the pretty much the same kind of plan that you folks in the House and the Senate, and I don't begrudge you for that, you know, it's a wonderful health plan, but why can't the rest of us have that?
Well, absolutely. The rest of the country should have at least that. And let me tell you, it is not such a great plan. When I used to be mayor of Burlington, the janitor in City Hall had a better plan than members of Congress have today. But they have a good plan, and at the very least, everybody in America should have a similar plan. The truth is, and Rick raises the question, you're quite right, that some of our right-wing Republican friends say, well, we can't afford it. But study after study shows that our current system is the most bureaucratic, wasteful, expensive, and inefficient in the entire industrialized world, and that, in fact, we do not have to spend more money for health care to provide health care to all of our people. We just need to move to a simple, nonprofit national health care program, and we can do it.
And what do you say to these critics? Like, for instance, you watch some of the Fox News, they're about the only overtly right-wing network, and you see this email coming in, you know, to people like O'Reilly and somebody from Britain or Australia or Canada says, oh, you folks in America don't want this. We have these terrible long waiting lines. How do you deal with that?
Well, I'll tell you how you deal with it. I'm talking to you from now is about an hour away from the Canadian border. Ain't nobody in Canada in government would ever raise the issue of moving to an American system, because they'd be thrown out of office immediately. All of the parties there, you know,
I've been to Canada and I've talked to people.
Support the concept. I was in Europe a couple of years ago, and you go to countries like Sweden or Norway, the most conservative people there, most conservative, would never in a million years think about moving away from a system which guarantees health care to all people. They have problems. Every system has its problems. They all argue about how it could be made efficient. But the United States today is the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care as a right of citizenship to all people. And I would not want to be the politician in any of these countries advocating a move to an American system.
No, I've been to Canada a few times, and I've talked to people, and they say they'd never give that up. And as far as long lines, I guess people don't stop to think about the times you have to go to emergency rooms here in America if you don't have insurance. I had to wait 5 hours one time just to have an abscess tooth dealt with, because I didn't have insurance.
Yeah. Well, not only an emergency situation, you call up your doctor, they say, well, sure, come on in. In 3 weeks, we can make an appointment for you. I mean, the point is not that the Canadian system is perfect, and the British system has a lot of problems in it. But what they do is guarantee health care to all of their people. People do not want to move away from that concept. And what we should also understand when we criticize the Canadian system is that we spend twice as much per person on health care as the Canadians and three times as much as the British. And I think in both those countries you need to spend more money to improve the system. But I don't see the leaders of those countries advocating moving to an American system, because I think the system because they'd be thrown out of office if they did.
Well, it seems to me, too, that that if you talk about higher taxation, for instance, in a country like Canada, you know, the thing that the trade-off of that is, there's a bigger safety net there. I don't think they have the extreme poverty in Canada that they do in this country.
No, they don't. But here's the point about taxation and health care. What the right wing plays on, it's really quite demagogic, is they say, well, a national health care system would result in increased taxes.
Right.
That's true. But what they forget to tell you is you would not be paying private health insurance. Your employer would not be at a competitive disadvantage by having to spend a substantial amount of money on health care rather than on doing the business that he's supposed to be doing. And the bottom line, though, is at the end of the day, a simplified, comprehensive, universal system is the most cost-effective way to go. And that, in my view, is the direction that we've got ahead.
Yeah, well said. Rick, thanks for the call. A single-payer system. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Robert in Ohio is on the line. Hey, Robert, where in Ohio are you?
I'm Chambersburg, Ohio.
Uh-huh, great.
Okay, I had a question. I'm a self-employed, and I just want to know, I know health costs mean insurance is going up next year on most individuals self-employed. You know, it's going to the increase of the pay is going to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
Is Congress doing anything to try to keep it like it is?
Is Congress going to do anything to try and keep down the costs of health care for self-employed people who are paying their own insurance premiums?
Yeah,
there are like some. The answer is yes. And there are a number of pieces of legislation out there, including tax credits. But self-employed people are getting absolutely decimated with the increases in health insurance because they have to pick up all of the 10, 15, or 20% increases a year, which is just not sustainable. So to answer Robert's question, yes, we are trying to protect self-employed people.
Thanks for calling, Robert. Good to hear from you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, have a good one. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Gail in Houston, Texas, on the line. Hey, Gail, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, how are you? My question is this. We're talking about expenses that Canada has and England has on their medical system and saying that we're spending two and three times as much. Are we talking per person?
Yes, we are.
We have a giant population.
No, Gail, you're right. We're talking per person. Obviously, we're not talking. Our population is much larger. So the point is here is that our system is a very inefficient system because what we're dealing with is a profit-making system run by insurance companies whose goal is not to provide you with the best quality care at the lowest possible prices. It's to make as much money as they possibly can. And we are spending huge sums of money on administration and bureaucracy and on the entire billing process. Just think, if you go to any hospital in Texas, Gail, or in Vermont or any place else, you're going to have a whole lot of people in that hospital who are not providing you with health care. They're not doctors or nurses. What they are people who are billing you. And you're going to have people arguing about how much you owe and what kind of coverage you have. A simple system, which would be universal and comprehensive, would eliminate a lot of that waste and allow us to put money into health care. But to answer your question, Gail, you're absolutely right. We're talking about per person, not country versus country.
Yeah. The key to it, Gail, is that when the government provides health care, just like government's providing police service or fire service, you don't have the CEO of the health service in Canada making a $20 million a year salary like so many of the CEOs of health and pharmaceutical companies do here in the United States.
I understand we have a very different lifestyle, but I also have some friends here who live here from Canada who praise Canada but like living here but go back there for the medical system. So how do you figure that?
They go back to Canada for the medical care?
Yeah.
That's,
well, of course they do.
That's a common story.
They have health care without having to spend any money for it. They get it as Canadian citizens.
But they do like
Gail,
the lifestyle here. So it's hard. It's
yeah.
a difficult one.
Well, and particularly down in Texas, you have nice weather in the winter.
Here is the story. I mean, I think the first issue that we have got to deal with regard to health care and what Canada has done in Great Britain and every other major country, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, all have done that. And, Gail, we have got to address the issue, should every American, as a right of citizenship, be entitled to health care? And I understand that there are some people who say no, they shouldn't, but I think the vast majority of the people in our country say yes. that it is wrong for a working family to have to live under the stress of wondering what happens if there's an illness or an accident in the family. And if I'm sorry, Gail, yeah?
I'm sorry. I work for a number of different charities where we do raise money for people who can't afford, and we try and, you know, do a lot of fundraising. So, yeah, there has to be an answer somewhere. I'm not sure exactly
where it is. Gail, charities do a whole lot of good. But the answer is that everybody recognizes that charity is not going to do it. The problems are just too deep, and we have 45 million people who are uninsured. Charity is not going to solve that problem. That's a problem that's going to have to be solved politically by the United States government.
Thanks for the call, Gail. You know, Bernie, in my mind, it just boils down to we have decided somewhere along the line, and it was a decision that was made largely in the last 60 to 80 years in the United States, that we have a right to have our government protect our house if it catches on fire. And therefore, we've taxed ourselves and we create fire departments. They used to be private. It used to be that, you know, there'd be three or four competing fire departments in a big city. And if your house caught on fire and you were paying into the wrong fire department, they'd just drive right by and let your house burn down. And we decided it's a right. And why don't we decide that if suddenly somebody gets cancer and they're facing, you know, their body's on fire, that they have a right to have that fire put out, too? I mean, it's just...
Well, Tom, you know, it's an interesting point. You know, you talked about that probably given the fact that the election is coming up, there'll be an amendment on the floor regarding flag burning, and God knows what other kind of political amendments will be put on the floor. I have never yet participated, and I've been in Congress now for 14 years, on the perhaps most important debate facing America, and that is just this issue. Should all Americans be entitled to health care as a right of citizenship? And if the answer is yes, how do we do that in the most cost-effective way? You know what? We don't debate that issue, which is probably the most important domestic issue facing our country.
Just in the last week, I've heard John Kerry three times say that he believes that all Americans should have a right to health. It's the first time to health care. It's the first time that I have heard a national politician talk about it. Let's go back to the phones here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Dan in Austin. Hey, it's Texas Day. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a comment. I used to live in Canada, and I moved over here because of my wife. She was from Seattle, Washington, and I just wanted to tell you that there's actually nothing wrong with national health care like we had in Canada. It worked out great. I was paying $36 a month. That's how much you paid to have, like, to be totally covered by emergency health care, and it worked out great. And I moved over here, and I can't afford to pay the health care. I'm a truck driver, and I just can't afford it. My wife pays for it, and she's paying for me, herself, and my daughter $125 a week.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And she makes $11 an hour, and that doesn't work out real well for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, I think
Dan hit it right on the head. I mean, number one, that people who are making $11 an hour are paying these outrageously and unaffordable costs for health care is a national disgrace. And second, go to Canada, talk to people there. What they will tell you is their system is not perfect. It needs to be improved. In fact, I think they need to spend more money on it. But by and large, it is a good system which works well. That's for health care. In terms of prescription drugs, I think we all know that there are now 2 or 3 million Americans well, buying their prescription drugs in Canada because, on average, they're about half the price they are in the United States.
Yeah.
So no one's saying the Canadian system is perfect, but it works quite well in most instances, and the Canadians most certainly, do not want to move to an American system, which has resulted in 45 million people in this country without any health insurance at all, and insurance premiums going up 10-15% a year.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Ann in Sarasota, Florida, on the line. Hey, Ann.
Hi, I'm glad you're talking about this topic today because it's a very important one. Quick case, what happened to my husband and I. We had insurance. We thought we had fairly decent insurance and through a major company, and my husband had a heart attack last summer. Found out... several weeks later that Aetna, the company, had changed our policy and changed our benefits and claimed that they had sent me a notice 7 months before, but I never got it. And long story short, I ended up with huge, huge bills that they were denying to pay. Talked to an attorney. He said, look at your policy. And what our policy said was that changes to the plan were subject to approval by the board of Aetna, but it didn't say anything about having to notify us. And what the attorney told us is that in 30-some states in the United States, they don't have to even give you notice if they change your policy. So you may think you have coverage, and when you go to use it, you find out you don't have what you're paying for or you think you're paying for. What's more, now I can't go elsewhere and get coverage because my husband's got a pre-existing condition, and I cannot find a single insurance company that will touch him.
And boy, in 1 minute you hit the nail right on the head. You just summarized the absurdity of the current American system. And you know, our heart goes out to you and your family struggling with this, but the issue that you have raised impacts millions of families. The insanity of changing the rules that you are insured under without your knowledge, and then telling your husband that because he has a heart problem, that's an area they're not going to cover because that's a pre-existing condition. This is clinically insane. What is insurance supposed to be? It's supposed to be there when we need it, not when to deny us coverage in those medical areas that we need it the most.
Right. So all those people that think they have coverage and right. think that they're secure and, well, it can't happen to me, don't you believe it. Go check your policy. Check with your state because, hey, they can pull to them what they pulled on us, and then they're going to be in the same position. So now we have to worry that if he goes in the hospital again, you know, how are you going to pay for it? Lose your home, take bankruptcy, what?
Well, and as you also know,
the
high cost of medicine and people's inability to pay their hospital bills are one of the major causes of bankruptcy in this country. But Ann, you hit it right on the head. Now, we hope things work out as best they can for you. But
Thank you.
Issue that you have just touched on is something that applies to millions of people. And thanks very much for sharing that experience.
Yeah, it's truly a tragedy. We have more people right now declaring bankruptcy in the United States than we had during the Great Depression, and more than half of them are the result of medical expenses that they can't pay. It's just terrible. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's Brunch with Bernie, Friday, the first hour of our Friday afternoon program. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaires!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts.
on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A magnetic compass is the oldest and sometimes most important piece of navigational equipment on board most ships. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Alan Gurney begins his new book, Compass, with the story of a brand new yacht on its maiden voyage in 1998. The luxurious boat bristled with computerized navigational equipment, but Gurney says the electronic systems went dead the first night at sea and there was no magnetic compass on board.
So there they were, stuck on this high-tech yacht with this great array of screens and batteries and keyboards, all like a James Bond movie. And they didn't know where the hell they were sailing.
Gurney, a former yacht designer himself, says the boat eventually made it back to port. But he says the wayward yacht's experience underscores our continued dependence on this simple device. Gurney traces the history of the compass from its first documented use in the year 1187. He says the device was so valued that sailors in the 1500s had a hand pinned to the mast with a dagger if they were caught messing with it, usually a magnetized needle in a bowl of water. Gurney says as vital as the compass was, it had its limits. The Earth's magnetic poles do not lie directly under its geographic poles, a phenomenon known as magnetic variation.
The needle points north, but it's not to true north, of course. It's to magnetic north. And it took centuries before people realized that magnetic north changes. And also, if you're sailing up in the high latitudes in the Arctic and you're getting closer to the north magnetic pole, the pull of the magnetic field tends to make the needle very skittish.
The problem of magnetic variation was solved in the 18th century with the help of the astronomer Edmund Halley. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It doesn't matter what they do.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We've got, this is the shortest segment of the day. We've got about 3 minutes here, several calls. Let's go right to the phones. Alan in Nashville, North Carolina is on the phone. Hey, Alan.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Wanted to input a little bit about the Canadian Medicare system. I'm a dual citizen. I grew up in Canada. And both my parents worked as doctors in a children's hospital in Canada. So I grew up, you know, seeing Medicare from the inside and the outside. And, you know, my father always says that, you know, billing someone in Canada was like walking across the street, but billing someone in the United States where he works now is like having to take a trip to the moon. It's just awful. He spends his whole day fighting with insurance companies who want to throw his chronically ill children out onto the street, because their plan says the kids need to stay in for 5 days, and, oh, my goodness, this kid needs to stay in for 10 days, and that's a big crime for the insurance companies.
Yeah. Alan, thanks for sharing that with us.
Alan hit it right on the head. Again, the waste in our system is huge, and the insanity, again, of doctors having to spend their days fighting with insurance companies rather than providing health care is absurd.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy.
Hi. The reason we're just screwing it up on this debate is that the concept of insurance is wrong for what we're using it for. Insurance is about having different people need to be taken care of in different size pools. Well, in America, you've got the whole pool. You insure when you can't afford having something happen to you. A company like Intel, for example, it pays its own health insurance. It may hire a health insurance company to handle the billing specific, but America can cover us all, and this, the keeping this evil business in at all is treason and nothing less.
Okay, well, you're
we
right.
Don't need
bottom line is that every American citizen is entitled to health care, and we can do it far more cost-effectively than the absurd system we currently have.
Well said, Billy. Last word goes to Vicki in San Diego, California. Hey, Vicki.
Oh, hi.
Only got about 20 seconds
here. This isn't just on that. I believe in national health care. But I've been listening to, I listened to the African American Caucus, and I was listening to Dr. James Zogby today on Air America, and these groups need to be addressed. Bush mentioned the Arabic community, I think in the 2000 election,
yeah.
And he got a lot of their vote.
Vicki, I'm sorry, we're out of time here. Bernie, last 20 seconds for comments on addressing diversity here.
Well, I don't have anything profound to say on that one. The last point that I wanted to make is sure. To many of our veterans who are listening out there, and that when we talk about national priorities, people should be aware that we pushed through 160,000 veterans off of VA health care last year. His budget is a disaster for veterans this year.
Thanks, Bernie.
And
we're out of time.
We've got to change
Tom Hartman
that.
Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
As the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passes the 1,000 mark, the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions sent a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister yesterday condemning the wave of hostage-taking and killing of migrant workers. The number of foreign workers killed in Iraq since March 2003 jumped at the end of August following the videotaped killing of 12 Nepalese and 3 Turkish workers. In addition, recent kidnappings of 2 Italian foreign relief workers were also condemned by the organization and has led many aid groups to consider pulling out. Earlier this month, 7 truck drivers from the countries of India, Kenya, and Egypt were released by their captors, but only after their employer paid a ransom the equivalent of $500,000. In the letter, the ICFTU said that more than 20 workers are currently being held hostage, and the group has called upon the Iraqi government to provide better security for workers of all nationalities.
1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just 2 votes, with 5 Republicans supporting the Democrats. Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Workers at a Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois, have until next Wednesday to volunteer for a severance package, or they could face layoffs. The automaker intends to cut the factory's second shift and lay off about 1,200 workers on September 24th. The severance package will pay 80% of the volunteer's salary for up to 70 weeks. Remaining layoffs will be determined by seniority. The Japanese company has been facing a 36% decrease in worldwide sales. The Illinois plant is Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It pays to be a political contributor. According to United for a Fair Economy, CEOs of the 69 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay increase by 52% in 2003. Also, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either Bush or Kerry earned an average of $15.2 million in 2003, 88% more than the average large company CEO.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
See if this sounds familiar. A sour and rabidly partisan Vietnam vet named John O'Neill is plucked from obscurity by the Republican White House to be used as an attack dog against John Kerry. O'Neill creates a hokey citizens group as a political front for no other purpose than to pound Kerry about his war service. But the assault I'm describing is not this year's effort by O'Neill to ambush Kerry with a dummy operation he has labeled Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Rather, I'm talking about O'Neill's first tour of duty in service to a Republican president's campaign, none other than Richard Nixon's. Yes, Tricky Dick, the guy who invented our detestable modern-day politics of personal destruction, was the one who first unleashed O'Neill on Kerry way back in 1971. Kerry then was the just-returned war hero who was so eloquently speaking out and helping turn public opinion against Nixon's expanding war. So Tricky Dick decided to try killing the messenger through a nasty personal attack on Kerry. Of course, a president can't be seen doing such dirty work himself, so Nixon's top political hatchet man, the infamous Chuck Colson, recruited O'Neill specifically to make the hit on Kerry. Back then, O'Neill called his front group Vietnam Veterans for a Just Peace. But it was the exact same kind of negative scam he's fronting today. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's unclear whether George W. has personally met with O'Neill to urge him on, as Nixon did in 1971, but it's clear that the Bush political operation and funding network is behind O'Neill's smear campaign. Not only is the truth of this coming out, but so is the hilarious knee-slapping irony of watching George trying to shuck and jive around the smear. Since Bush can't even produce proof that he showed up for his National Guard duty in Mississippi, he shouldn't be trying to spit on the five medals that Kerry earned in combat.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet. Absolutely amazing, the technology these days. So pleased to be back. Yesterday, I mentioned, I made the mistake of mentioning that there was stuff going on in the chat room that I couldn't repeat on the air. So today, my wife and daughter are both in there. You can drop by TomHartman.com and click live chat if you want to drop in and say hi. Anyhow, I find it's just great. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And we have a lot of news, a lot of fascinating things going on in the world today, some kind of scary things, some kind of strange things. Let's start out with Swami on the News, with America's best-known political guru and uncommentator, Swami Beyond Ananda. Swami is the author of a new book, Swami for President, a seven-step plan to heal the body politic and cure electile dysfunction. Swami's reporting to us today live from the latest war front. Swami?
Yes, you know, that's right. Our fearless leader, he's a war president, right? And ever since the victory was declared in Iraq, he's been looking for the next target. And so here I am. I'm reporting from the front lines in the war on veterans, where the president's minions have launched three preemptive attacks in the last 4 years.
The war on veterans?
That's right. You see, 4 years ago, they attacked John McCain. And 2 years ago, they attacked Senator Max Cleland, right? Now, he's the one who lost three limbs in Vietnam. And they said his failure to lose a fourth one showed that he was not willing to give his all.
No.
And so this year, of course, the not-so-swift boat captains are trying to torpedo the Kerry campaign.
Yeah, why on earth? Why on earth would... I mean, this, why would George Bush want to attack a decorated veteran?
Well, you know, there's one theory that's going around that says it has to do with his opposition to gays in the military.
What?
Because, look, if you're going to have decorated soldiers, somebody's going to have to do the decorating, right?
Okay.
So that's not my theory. I have another one. My theory is when reporters looked at our president's military record... Well, let's just say the record skipped.
Yeah. Dip, dip, dip.
And, you know, there's reason to believe, there's evidence that he shirked even the light duty he was given to avoid the heavy duty.
You mean...
That's right. Our president was missing in inaction.
Ah!
And the war on veterans, I see it as a diversionary tactic to cover his own tracks, or in this case, lack of tracks.
Yeah, but, you know, there are a lot of people who would say, okay, that's in the past. George Bush right now is serving America right now.
And he is. Of course he's serving America. He's serving America up on a silver platter to the likes of Halliburton and the energy companies and the drug companies. But one person, well, he's not serving, the people he's not serving are the war veterans. Because he could have said to the veterans, he could have said, you're right to serve, and raise their health benefits. But instead, he actually lowered the benefits for middle-class veterans and said, serve your right.
Hmm. Do you think, Swami, with all these attacks on Kerry and the other war veterans, that George Bush has made any headway at all on this so-called character issue?
Well, listen, here's the character issue in a nutshell, and because I'm a nut, I can do this.
Okay.
Here it is. It takes character and courage to stand up for your country, right?
Yeah.
And it takes even more character and courage to stand up to your country when you think your country is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a young man, John Kerry did both of those. George Bush did neither. And I think that characterizes the character issue perfectly well.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Swami. Swami Beyond Ananda can be found online at www.wakeuplaughing.com. Thank you, Swami, for being with us.
You're quite welcome. May the farce be with you.
Thank you, and you too. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 11 minutes past the hour. I guess I've hit the big time here. I'm getting the Republican talking points that go out to talk show hosts. And I just had every now and then one comes across my desk that is just so cool, I have to share it with you. This actually came from one of the PR firms that handles a lot of right-wing causes. And a woman named Diana. Well, I'm not going to out her last name, but or give her email. I mean, that would be nasty. But anyhow, it's Diana sent this thing out from one of the nation's larger PR companies, and the headline, the subject, is "Don't Give Kitty Kelly Airtime." And here's the email. As many of you may know, Kitty Kelly is coming out with her trashing of the Bush family next week in her newest book, The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty. And then Diana goes on to talk about how Kitty Kelly trashed the president, Mrs. Reagan, and doesn't talk about her trashing the royal family in England, which actually got her more publicity, I think. And she says, the liberal mainstream media will be giving this book maximum attention to boost sales, hurt Bush, help Kerry, and help Kitty make the bestseller list, blah, blah, blah. The Today Show alone is going to have 3 interviews with her. Kerry campaign is already chortling over how this book will help them. Now, these folks consider conservative talk radio to be part of what they euphemistically call the new media, right? This is like non-traditional. It's something other than the networks. And so here we are. Here we get to it. We believe that our friends in the new media can hurt her being Kitty Kelly, and thus help President Bush by not booking her as a guest or even discussing the book. This is a pitch in the dirt. Don't even swing at it. You and the new media are winning the war against the old media at the networks, the New York Times, etc. Here's your chance to prove it. We urge you to, quote, and this is in quotes, go black, end quote, on Kitty Kelly's newest smear. So, per the request of this public relations company that was sent out to the email list that I just happened to be on of conservative talk show hosts all across the country, don't ask me how I got on. Well, sometimes you've got to engage in a little subterfuge. Anyhow, they wanted to be sure that you knew that Kitty Kelly's book is not going to be discussed on any conservative talk shows. Well, actually, I'm not sure that they wanted you to know that. They wanted the conservative talk shows to. So, you know, I think it would be really interesting, in fact, fascinating, if you, at other times of the day, of course, happen to be listening to a conservative talk show and a telephone number is given out and you just call up and say, why don't you discuss Kitty Kelly's book? Is it because you got the memo from Diana asking you not to? And see if they sputter. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Paul Krugman, a great column in today's New York Times. It's the dishonesty, stupid, he says. And the point that he's making about this thing, this whole issue of Bush, and I think that this is ultimately the issue that Kitty Kelly is bringing up in her new book about the Bush family, in which, for among other things, Kitty Kelly is, in her book, saying that George W. Bush's sister-in-law, Sharon, recently divorced from his brother Neil, after Neil tried explaining that those women in Southeast Asia, I forget which country he was in, I think it was Hong Kong, they would just knock on his hotel room door, you know, and he would open the door and they would walk in and start taking their clothes off. And he couldn't figure out why or you know, why they were there. But, gee, there they were, no clothes. And so he figured, why not? And she got a divorce. And some of the Bush family are saying, well, she's just, a woman spurned, and that's what's going on. And but the larger question, perhaps, or the other issue is what she said true? Because what she said to Kitty Kelly is that George W. Bush was snorting cocaine at Camp David while his father was president. And there's a story in today's New York Times, I believe it is. I don't have it written in front of me. I was just looking for it. It's in the pile here someplace. But here it is. Yeah, it's in today's New York Times, article by David Kirkpatrick. A representative of the White House recently called Neil Shapiro, president of NBC News, to discourage that network from broadcasting interviews with Ms. Kelly about the book on his Today program and on Hardball with Chris Matthews, a network executive said. And the Republican Party has distributed a memo to conservative talk show hosts listing tawdry, unproven assertions about Kitty Kelly. So they're doing character assassination on Kitty Kelly now. But anyhow, here we cut to the chase. In the back and forth yesterday, Sharon Bush, the former wife of the president's brother Neil and a central source for the book, issued a preemptive retraction after a British newspaper printed an article on the book quoting Sharon Bush, as saying that Mr. Bush, George W. Bush, used cocaine at Camp David while his father was in office. And she says, in an unsworn statement distributed by her lawyer David Berg, and that unsworn is a very significant thing for a document distributed by a lawyer. Because a lawyer would know that if you want to make a statement and have it have any credibility, all you have to do is say, I swear this is the truth, and sign your name. And she did not do that in this statement. Her unsworn statement reads, I categorically deny that I ever told Kitty Kelly that George W. Bush used cocaine at Camp David or that I ever saw him use cocaine at Camp David. Although there have been tensions between me and various members of the Bush family, I cannot allow this falsehood to go unchallenged. End quote. Well, I'm guessing that somewhere in the contract, the divorce contract between Ms. Bush and Neil Bush, there might be some language that might have something to do with what kind of compensation she gets in the Bush family on an ongoing basis that's starting to make her a little nervous here. Because Lou Colasano, or Colasano, her former publicist, confirmed, let me back up just a little bit. Kitty Kelly says not only did she have this four-hour discussion with Sharon Bush, and Sharon Bush told her all these things, but that there was somebody else in the room with her as she was having the discussion. She hasn't said that she recorded it. That would have been probably it was an unrecorded discussion. But there was a third party in the room who was a witness to it. And it turns out that third party was Ms. Bush's former publicist. And he, in fact, has now confirmed that he was in the room during the meeting, and he said, I have only seen the news reports, that being the report that she said that George W. was doing cocaine at Camp David. He says, according to what I have seen and what has been reported, I would not dispute that. So here we have Sharon Bush's publicist saying, well, yeah, she did tell Kitty Kelly this. Sharon Bush denying it, but refusing to swear to her denial. But, to get back to Paul Krugman's thing, the issue is not whether or not somebody was doing coke or whether or not somebody served in the National Guard. It's whether they're willing to lie about it today. And apparently that's what's going on. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to four more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 9/11 is tomorrow. I mean, literally. Today, the 10th of September. 53 days to regime change, 1,103 days since 9/11, 754 days since the anthrax attacks, 673 days since we began the search for weapons of mass distraction, 460 days since a felon in the White House outed Valerie Plame. But the bottom line, tomorrow, 9/11, the third anniversary. I think an appropriate, an altogether appropriate response to 9/11. I'm sure that all the con talk shows out there and, you know, right-wing hosts and con publications and websites and all this stuff are just going to be wallowing in the, oh, they hit us, we've got to hit us, we've got, you know, isn't it great that Georgie took us to war in Iraq? I mean, just yesterday, perhaps it was the day before, in the last 2 days, Dick Cheney once again linked Saddam Hussein to 9/11. And as the 9/11 Commission said, there were no operational links whatsoever between Iraq and 9/11. And when they asked his spokeswoman about it, she says, "Oh, well, there's Zarqawi. There's this guy who's, you know, in Fallujah now. He's tied in with Osama. Well, yeah, he's in Fallujah now. He wasn't then. Well, there was this one guy that was recovering from his war wounds." I mean, come on, one guy? Anyhow, I think that an appropriate response to 9/11 would be to get the answers to a few questions. And these are a few of the questions that have not been answered by the 9/11 Commission or by the Congressional Inquiry. In fact, have not even been asked. And these are not my questions. These are questions most of which came from the families, the 9/11 families. Keep in mind, 49.3% in a Zogby poll of New Yorkers, New York City residents. This was a poll taken just before the Republican National Convention. Believed that George Bush had foreknowledge of the attack. It's pretty mind-boggling when you think about it. Why was Philip Zelikow chosen to be the executive director of the independent 9/11 Commission, even though he had co-authored a book with Condoleezza Rice? I'd like to know the answer to that question, wouldn't you? Why did the Bush administration cover up the fact that the head of the Pakistani intelligence agency was in Washington, D.C. the week of 9/11 and had wired $100,000 to Mohammed Atta, the ringleader of the hijackers, at least so they're claiming? Whatever happened to the over 20 documented warnings given to our government by 14 foreign intelligence agencies or heads of state? How were the FBI and CIA able to release the names and photos of the alleged hijackers within hours, as well as to visit houses, restaurants, and flight schools they were known to frequent? Now, this is pretty fast. Could it be that they had an idea this might happen? Could it be they might even have written it down? Could it be they might even have written it down and put it on a memo that says, Osama bin Laden determined to strike in America and given it to George Bush on August 6th in Crawford, Texas? After which time he went on the longest vacation in the history of the President of the United States presidency. And these guys say they're going to keep us safe? These guys who failed to keep us safe? How could Flight 77, which reportedly hit the Pentagon, have flown back towards Washington, D.C. for 40 minutes without being detected by the FAA's radar or even the superior radar possessed by the U.S. military? You mean to tell me that our military radar right now cannot detect a 757 in the air for almost an hour heading to Washington, D.C.? Come on. You really expect us to believe that? And if not, then why were the extensive missile batteries and air defenses around the Pentagon not activated? Just a few questions I think maybe we should be asking on the anniversary of 9/11. Tom Hartman with you, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
As the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passes the 1,000 mark, the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions sent a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister yesterday condemning the wave of hostage-taking and killing of migrant workers. The number of foreign workers killed in Iraq since March 2003 jumped at the end of August following the videotaped killing of 12 Nepalese and 3 Turkish workers. In addition, recent kidnappings of 2 Italian foreign relief workers were also condemned by the organization and has led many aid groups to consider pulling out. Earlier this month, 7 truck drivers from the countries of India, Kenya, and Egypt were released by their captors, but only after their employer paid a ransom the equivalent of $500,000. In the letter, the ICFTU said that more than 20 workers are currently being held hostage, and the group has called upon the Iraqi government to provide better security for workers of all nationalities.
1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just 2 votes, with 5 Republicans supporting the Democrats. Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Workers at a Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois, have until next Wednesday to volunteer for a severance package, or they could face layoffs. The automaker intends to cut the factory's second shift and lay off about 1,200 workers on September 24th. The severance package will pay 80% of the volunteer's salary for up to 70 weeks. Remaining layoffs will be determined by seniority. The Japanese company has been facing a 36% decrease in worldwide sales. The Illinois plant is Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It pays to be a political contributor. According to United for a Fair Economy, CEOs of the 69 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay increase by 52% in 2003. Also, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either Bush or Kerry earned an average of $15.2 million in 2003, 88% more than the average large company CEO.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ellen Ratner's with us from the Talk Radio News Service, our Washington correspondent. Hey, Ellen, let's try something unique for a moment, if you have the time.
Sure.
I have two callers on hold. We this is a call-in show, I've got a couple. How about we take these calls together?
Well, that's fine. On most of my stations, I do take calls, so
okay.
I'm happy to go for it.
Well, let's check that out. I'm not sure what these folks want to talk about. We don't pre-screen other than, what's your name, where are you from, and are you sober enough to go on the radio? So here's Ken in Humble, Texas is on the line. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Oh, God, talk about nervous now. Hello, thanks. General Rand, I'm sorry. I mean, I really like her report, so I don't want to dissuade from her.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Okay.
I'm
an out-of-work engineer, so I'm not a statistic. I have no health benefits. I'm not insured, so I don't qualify under that. And I've been having to get medicine that I need just to function out of Canada, and the government, U.S. government, pressured the second group of Canadian pharmacies to shut down provision of this medicine. The Canadians are being great because they're getting this stuff for me out of Europe, if you can. And I'm not, life-threatening danger. It's just saving me money. So I just wanted to, express a frustration. I mean, I guess I see these ads on television, Bush saying how he's going to help my health care, all this stuff. It just never seems to stop with these people.
Yeah, yeah.
The second thing with this assault weapons ban, it dawns on me, especially from a historic perspective, and you could comment better on this, that this seems, from what I've studied in history, to be like a prelude to the American Civil War, the road to Manassas. I've never seen so much anger. I feel anger, and with these weapons dropping, I mean, how much of a danger is that? I mean, with this thing coming about, there's no division between Mason-Dixon line, which would have a solidification on this, but what could happen on this?
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Ellen?
Both. As somebody said, you mentioned the Mason-Dixon line, that if the red states and blue states were to line up the way they did with the Mason-Dixon line, we'd have a civil war. And I think it's that way around health care, which was mentioned. I think that's the way about gun control and gun issues, which you were talking about. I'm afraid there's a very serious divide. It's just not geographic like it was in the Civil War.
Yeah. Yeah, my sense of it is, number one, that John Kerry has now put on the table, the first time a national politician in a national venue, in my memory, and maybe I've been just not paying attention, but I really believe this is the first time time. It's been seriously played up by the press. The suggestion, not just that we should make health care available to everybody, but that health care is a right. See, we believe in the United States collectively that education is a right, and so we all tax ourselves to provide for schools. We believe that if your house catches on fire, it is your right to have the state, to have your local community help put it out. We believe that if it's your right to be safe in your home, so we collectively pay for our police departments, and it carries logic as follows: then if health care is a right, then we would collectively pay for health care. It would become one of those systems that's paid through by a single-payer program that doesn't have, presumably, for-profit companies in the middle of it. And I think that's a noble and extraordinary thing, and a real contribution.
Well, you know, it's Tom, it's interesting, and I don't have it in front of me. I will get it for you for Monday. But at least one of the GOP platforms in one of the states says that health care is a privilege, not a right.
Yeah.
Now, that's pretty, to put it in a platform, I mean, how low can you go?
Well, but that's been the position of the party since basically the 1920s. I mean, Truman was the first one to introduce a single-payer health care as legislation before the United States Congress, and he got shot down on it. Harry Truman was saying health care is a right, and I don't think any politician since Harry Truman has said that.
Well, I think it was in the 48 platform of the Democratic Party.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was, actually. It was the first time that universal health care was mentioned, and it was in the platform of the Democratic Party in 1948.
God bless.
Can I ask a question, please?
Sure. Go for it, Ken.
Yeah, I mean, I have two master's degrees and partial completion on a doctorate. I mean, I could go on. I'm an engineer. I cannot get work because everything's been outsourced. I get angry about it, you know. I mean, I don't know anyone that wouldn't, I mean, or hasn't, the people I know. But, you know, like with the corollary with the Republicans, I mean, the garnishing of the wealth back to the turn of the century, it's like these rich plantation owners who use the poor people as the bulk of the Confederate Army, and they went so blindly. How come these people are not seeing this?
Yeah. That's the question of the day. Ken, I'm going to move along, but thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
The answer on my side is that they are being we are being deliberately manipulated. This whole, you know, vote for us or you'll die thing and on distractions, endless distractions and culture wars. Ellen, your take on it?
I don't disagree with you. I mean, the culture wars in this country are unbelievable. What might happen is that if Bush gets reelected, and given today's events in Washington, it's not looking too good for Mr. Kerry. I think that this country will look like Vietnam. It did in 1968 because of the Vietnam War, and then I think we will come together because we realize that once again we've been duped.
I think it's going to look more like the United States in 1930. Frankly. And I think the world is very quickly is going to look more like the world did in 1938-39. But that, you know, that's scary.
There's an interesting scenario. If Russia comes in and begins to do this unilateral bombing of Islamic countries and Islamic people who they think are terrorists, we could quickly find ourselves in the kind of war that really was World War II. Now, they're not going to have the weapons that we had, but they certainly have the people.
Well, we could find ourselves in that war with Russia. You know, this is the most underreported story, I think, of the week, certainly, maybe of the month and probably of the year. And I think the setup for the genuine World War III, Putin is spitting mad about the fact that a bunch of neocons have created this commission for a free Chechnya, or whatever it's called, peaceful resolution, and they're the same. Many of them are the same people who signed the.
They think they can go around Putin and organize.
Oh yeah, yeah, and
negotiate.
And we have given refuge. The United States has given refuge, refugee status, political refugee status to the number two. Guy in the political organization in Chechnya that is in charge of the separatist movement, and we call it the separatist movement. This would be the equivalent of taking Osama bin Laden's number two guy and Russia giving him sanctuary. And that's how they view it. And Putin is just furious. He's saying, I'm not telling you to go over and negotiate with bin Laden in a cave. Why are you telling me to go negotiate with these terrorists that just murdered these women, children, and men in this school near the
No, I agree with you. Nobody has gotten they've been so distracted by Kerry and Bush and Iraq that they haven't paid attention to the
Putin is all but threatening
there, or even North Korea.
Yeah, North Korea, you know, Kim Kim Jong-il, he might have 3 or 4 or 5 nukes. Putin has 7,000 nuclear bombs, 3/4 of them targeting our cities right now. And
well, and I never dealt with the President Clinton. I won't call it quite a lie, but let's call it a stretching of the truth, where he used to get up and say, not one missile is pointed at our kids. Well, it only takes 15 minutes to reposition a missile.
Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's the programming. Let's take Scott's call in Chicago real quickly, and then we'll get to your report. Scott, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
First of all, I just want to say that I think your show is great. I think I listen to it mainly for just a dose of reality, and it's my little comfort zone because it reminds me that the world is not completely insane.
Thank you.
I'm curious in your take. I mean, every time I read about Bush getting a bump and the spread becoming so large between these two candidates, it really frightens me. It makes me realize, first of all, that we are really split. But I get so scared of these undecided voters. I really feel all this talk on both sides is really not as helpful as John Kerry coming out and just becoming passionate, as he was when he got out of Vietnam. And he was a young man, and he wasn't afraid to speak his mind. Now, I worry that we're looking at another Al Gore, where he's going to be afraid. He's not going to know who he is.
Too packaged.
Yeah, and he's not going to...
They did too package him, this is the problem that every candidate has once he gets a hold of the campaign strategists. And that definitely is a huge problem that Kerry has. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think with Bush... He's not afraid to just be an idiot because, or seem simple because that seems to be with a lot of the Republicans, but also the undecided voters. You know, they seem to say, okay, well, at least he's staying on message.
Scott,
Kerry,
he's
a little sophisticated.
Scott, hang on just a second. You have bought into the myth of the Republican Party, Scott. George Bush is the most scripted president in the history of this country. He's done the fewest number of press conferences in televised press conferences.
Trust me, I cover him at the White House.
Since television.
Finally, my dear friend Don Gagne at NPR got the last question in at the last press conference. I've been there for 4 years. I've never gotten to ask him a question.
Yeah, he's absolutely scripted. So all this aw shucks, I'm just a regular guy, and I'm just gonna answer this question in a way that mangles the English language, and you're gonna think that I just made a mistake. It's all intentional.
But it works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But it's all intentional. So when people say, well, you know, Bush is just kind of being himself, he's not just being himself.
Right. There's no passion at all. But Kerry, he is trying to be passionate, but not passionate enough. And I just get so worried that people, the undecided voters out there, are just going to buy into it and not want to think and just go with whatever the current fad is. Them telling you, you know, Bush is ahead, and they go, oh, well, that's comfortable. I'll go with whatever's popular.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. Scott, thanks for the call. Good
Thank
to hear
you.
From you. Ellen, you're okay. Let's get to your report here. I'm holding you on the line.
My report is really only related to what happened with CBS. Dan Rather basically said that he has no intention of apologizing, that CBS is sticking by their story at this point. They also are saying that they believe the witnesses and the documents are authentic, and they said that there's not going to be an apology, not even discussed. Meanwhile, Terry McAuliffe had a news conference this morning, and then he went on Bush for not telling the truth about his National Guard service. He said that, he went through all the stuff about receiving special treatment and Bush saying that he never received special treatment and didn't really totally connect with this issue of the CBS story, although rumor has it that part of the rumor is, well, maybe if they were fake, maybe Karl Rove did it to try and embarrass the Democrats. And that's sort of the latest theory.
Shoot ourselves in the foot to gain the sympathy vote?
This is such a wild story that it has that sort of spy versus spy quality.
Mad Magazine quality.
Exactly.
That's incredible.
Have you read Mad Magazine recently?
No, not since I was a kid.
Well, I'll tell you, pick it up again. It is some of the finest political satire I've seen.
Really? Really? It was when I was a teenager during the Vietnam War. Half the magazine was anti-Vietnam War stuff.
Well,
a friend of mine, Sergio Aragonés, used to write for it. Yeah. Sergio Aragonés is a...
And the Bush campaign is saying that they're not seeing a lot of damage from this guard attacks. They said that that it caught people's attention, but that essentially the it is nothing compared to the fact that Kerry came out against the Vietnam War when he came there, and that it's not affecting the swing voters.
Yeah, and they may well be right. I'm wondering if you all at the Talk Radio News Service got the memo that I got today from sbpublicaffairs.com from Diana and Craig there. Saying we urge you to go to black on Kitty Kelly's newest smear.
I did get that.
Yeah, went out to all the conservative talk show hosts.
Yeah, I got that. They've got us on there for some reason.
Yeah, please do not discuss Kitty Kelly.
I thought that very interesting. One last thing. Swift Boat people are coming out with two new commercials as early as next week. And we're not sure what they're going to do, but we know that they're planning on another hit.
Yeah. Well, it's the old, I forget which movie it was, but, you know, you send one of our guys to the hospital, we send three of your guys to the morgue. What was it, Al Pacino's line or something?
Exactly.
I'm forgetting that. Anyhow, Ellen, thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
You too. And, you know, good 9/11, good, however you memorialize it. But
My brother actually was in building number 7 at the time of the attack. So.
Did he make it through?
Well, yeah, because building number 7 didn't go down until 5 o'clock. He got out and saw the second plane.
Boy.
And has a hotel down there. So
That cuts close to the bone.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, have a good
weekend. Have a good weekend, and we will be thinking about 9/11.
There you go. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, our daily report. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. Here's another question that I have in memory of 9/11. And I really think that if we're going to honor the memory of the people who were murdered on 9/11, that an important part of honoring that memory is finding the answers to what happened. If Bob Graham's book, Intelligence Matters, his new book, is true, the Bush administration have not only before 9/11 prevented the FBI and CIA from finishing up investigations they had started during the Clinton administration that may well have revealed the whole plot and brought it down, but now are actively preventing any investigation of officials of the Saudi government. That's the Saudi government itself funding at least two of the hijackers. And Graham suggests that it may be that the reason this is happening is because the Bush family has taken, well, the Bush family has taken millions. George W. Bush himself, you know, of every one of his businesses failed until his daddy got him into the Texas Rangers. And he got into that with money from the Bin Laden family. And two of his business ventures that were failing were bailed out before they finally went down with money from Saudis, one with money from Osama bin Laden's brother. And that he's covering this stuff up because it would be embarrassing to his family. The connections between the Saudi royal family and the bin Laden family. Let's open this thing up. Why did the 9/11 Commission not look into connections between the Bush family, the bin Laden family, and the Saudi royal family? Why not? I'd like to know. I'd like to know the answer to that. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. 1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just 2 votes, with 5 Republicans supporting the Democrats.
There may be some vocations that privatizing is a good thing. However, when it comes to national security and the Department of Homeland Security's ability to protect the American public, these are not the positions that should be privatized.
Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Down in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
He also believes only trained professionals should be performing criminal background checks.
These jobs are privatized to somebody earning minimum wage to increase company profits. We run a greater risk of people being compromised in the positions that face it. These officers deal with criminal background investigations. They deal with counterterrorism efforts, and it's not the type of information that we want the general public to have access to or even have the ability to manipulate.
The amendment throws a wrench into congressional leaders' plans to recess for the year in October, before the November 2nd presidential and congressional elections. George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Come down from your ivory tower. John Kerry? Why do I... You know, well... Yeah, he's beginning to connect. I really think that John Kerry is beginning to connect. And I think that part of it, I thought it was interesting that, you know, all these news stories came out that Bill Clinton told him that he needed to be hammering away at George W. Bush on Iraq. And first of all, the question in my mind is, who's releasing the fact that Kerry was talking to Clinton for 90 minutes? I doubt it was the Kerry people. And I doubt it was the nurses in the hospital. And then secondly, who's releasing the content of the conversation? And then third, the fact that Kerry doesn't take the advice, which all, in my mind, adds up to Kerry's becoming his own man. And I you know, let's hope so. It certainly seems that way, and I think he's doing a good job. I think he's doing, and in fact, it's getting better and better. Somebody called and asked, where are these questions coming from that I've been reading here on the air? 911truth.org is one of many websites with this kind of information on it. Another, this is the one that really boggles my mind. And again, what gets me is you've got this 9/11 Commission report, you've got the congressional report, all this stuff, and here's something that was reported in the news media ad nauseum. I mean, I think everybody in America knows about this, and I have not heard one reporter ask one official with the 9/11 Commission or a member of Congress who participated in either of the congressional inquiries, or certainly any member of the administration, ask this question. Why was it that when it was discovered on 9/11 at the end of trading that day, or they suspended trading in the New York Stock Exchange, that there were all these puts on United and American Airlines? A put is a sell short order. In other words, if the stock is trading at $70, you say, okay, I'm willing to bet that stock's going to go down to $50. If the stock drops to 50, you make $20 instantly, and you only have to invest, you know, a small amount, say $1. You know, the cost of puts varies, but basically they're a bet. It's called selling short, and there were all these puts on American and United stock that were going to generate millions of dollars for whoever was speculating on these two stocks that suddenly appeared just in the days before 9/11. Obviously, somebody knew something was going to take out just these two airlines. The investigation into that was halted. Now, this is one where you can easily follow the money. It was halted. Why? Who stopped the investigation? Why don't we know who was buying those puts? Who was making those bets that United and American Airlines stocks were going to plunge, you know, metaphorically, literally, on 9/11? I'd like to know the answer to that one, too. Tom Hartman here with you, exposing the con in conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
As the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passes the 1,000 mark, the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions sent a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister yesterday condemning the wave of hostage-taking and killing of migrant workers. The number of foreign workers killed in Iraq since March 2003 jumped at the end of August following the videotaped killing of 12 Nepalese and 3 Turkish workers. In addition, recent kidnappings of 2 Italian foreign relief workers were also condemned by the organization and has led many aid groups to consider pulling out. Earlier this month, 7 truck drivers from the countries of India, Kenya, and Egypt were released by their captors, but only after their employer paid a ransom the equivalent of $500,000 American dollars. In the letter, the ICFTU said that more than 20 workers are currently being held hostage, and the group has called upon the Iraqi government to provide better security for workers of all nationalities.
1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just two votes, with five Republicans supporting the Democrats. Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Workers at a Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois, have until next Wednesday to volunteer for a severance package, or they could face layoffs. The automaker intends to cut the factory's second shift and lay off about 1,200 workers on September 24th. The severance package will pay 80% of the volunteer's salary for up to 70 weeks. Remaining layoffs will be determined by seniority. The Japanese company has been facing a 36% decrease in worldwide sales. The Illinois plant is Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It pays to be a political contributor. According to United for a Fair Economy, CEOs of the 69 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay increase by 52% in 2003. Also, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either Bush or Kerry earned an average of $15.2 million in 2003, 88% more than the average large company CEO.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Isn't it good to know that the humongous Department of Homeland Security is so wisely spending our tax dollars to defend us from terrorists? Take, for example, the slick mass mailings recently put out by DHS urging America's homeowners to buy flood insurance. Yes, flood insurance. In the midst of various color-coded warnings about imminent terrorist attacks on America, our Homeland Security authorities are spending their time and our money to hawk flood policies on behalf of giant insurance corporations. In a breathless and alarmist letter mailed to thousands of people, including my friend Susan, Mr. Michael Brown, purporting to be the Undersecretary for Emergency Preparedness and Response, warns in bold type that floods can happen anywhere. In a scary red tag warning on the envelope, Undersecretary Brown direly informs us that homeowners insurance doesn't cover you for America's number one natural disaster. So, in his letter, this homeland czar shrieks in blood-red type, "Don't delay! Get flood insurance today!" Ever so helpfully, he even provides the name and number of selected agents in your area who sell these insurance policies, urging you to call your agent. Of course, the vast majority of homeowners don't live in a floodplain and have no need whatsoever to waste their hard-earned money on such insurance. Indeed, my friend Susan lives on an upslope that has never, ever come close to being flooded. Also, Susan is not even a homeowner. Yet in the enclosed brochure, the Homeland authorities declare that flood insurance is for everyone. This is Jim Hightower saying, why is our government shilling for insurance giants, fraudulently peddling policies to people who don't need them and will never collect on them? If the Homeland Security Department doesn't have anything better to do than run insurance scams, Congress should yank its $40 billion a year budget.
The
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
38%. 46%. 42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends, to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. 10 minutes after the hour. Not 10 minutes. 7 minutes after the hour. Well, Dick Cheney has finally clarified. He wasn't saying vote for us or die. He was saying... If you fail to vote for Republicans, then maybe we'll get hit by an asteroid or a meteorite, and we'll get wiped out like the dinosaurs were 65 million years ago. That's it. That's it. That's what we were talking about. Because the Republicans want to build this Star Wars thing that will be able to intercept missiles, even though it never has and it has never been successfully. But we've spent we've given trillions of dollars of taxpayer money, particularly during the Reagan administration, to good friends of the Reagan administration. In fact, Don Rumsfeld's job before he became defense secretary was as a lobbyist for the Strategic Defense Initiative and some of its contractors. So, we're going to build this missile thing, and if an asteroid comes at the Earth, we'll be able to blow it up. Didn't you see that movie with Bruce Willis in it? You know what I'm talking about. And he says that. And then, otherwise, we'll fall back into the liberal pre-Cretaceous mindset. You know, it's thinking that asteroids are nothing to it's never going to happen. The last time it happened was 65 million years ago. It turns out that's what he was really talking about. Well, and the good news, just kidding. It wouldn't surprise me if some of you took that seriously. These guys have just been so weird. I mean, this administration, it has just been so weird that it would not be beyond them. I mean, some of the truth stretching explanations that they've been coming up with. The reason why we never looked into why they were selling, buying all those puts, those sell options on United Airlines and American Airlines stock just before 9/11, in the days before 9/11, so that if those two airline stock plunged, that speculator would make a fortune. The reason why we never looked into that is, John Kerry didn't really get hit very hard when he was in Vietnam. You get it? 9/11 is tomorrow. And, yesterday we read some of these questions in this hour and this program. I won't go over them again, but I think there's still some answers to be had. And Bob Graham's new book really, really, really raises it. And I got to tell you, the book I'm reading right now, and... some of you, and I know particularly a couple of the folks in our chat room, which you can drop in on, by the way, some of the most erudite, intellectual, intelligent, interesting, and sometimes down and dirty conversations on the entire Internet. Just go to TomHartman.com and click live chat right up at the top of the page or over on the left-hand side, and it'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And if you're not an AOL or CompuServe member, if you are an AOL or CompuServe member, you just type in your screen name and your password, and boom, you're in. And you never have to do it again because it remembers you. If you're not a member,
then you can just sign up very quickly, and it's not actually like joining AOL or CompuServe because you don't give them a credit card or any of that stuff. It's just, you know, getting you into the forum. All you have to do is provide them with your email address, and they're not going to spam you. It's just so that, you know, it's a security thing is the bottom line. You know, so if somebody goes in and starts spamming the forum, they can be blocked. But in any case, Jay, Kevin, Trish isn't here. I see, this is what happens. Hey, don't read the chat room when you're on the air, Mr. Hartman. Okay, that's fine. But I do read it during the breaks. I'm sorry, I'm compulsive about it. I know that some of the folks in the chat room are going to think that I have gone over the edge by telling you that this is the book that I'm reading right now. But it is. Pat Buchanan's new book, Where the Right Went Wrong. And I'm only about a third of the way through it, so I can't give you a definitive book review on it. But I got to tell you, if you can, and I think any well-informed liberal, progressive, middle of the road, anybody who has an understanding of American politics and understands the fundamental differences between right and left in terms of worldview, so that you can filter out some of the nonsense. I mean, you know, Buchanan does make you know, just patently partisan comments in there and just kind of slides them by as if they're factual. But it's easy enough to see through that stuff. And he's painting a portrait. In the first couple chapters of this book, he has painted a portrait of the Bush administration and the neocons who have come to control it that is very troubling. And I mean, you know, this is a guy who ran for president not as an independent, but as a Republican. This is a guy inside the party. And, I'm not yet to the point where I can say I've finished the book and I recommend the book in toto. But I've read the first third of it. And if you just want to sit in the bookstore and read it and then put it back on the shelf, you know, if you... I mean, far be it from me to ever say don't buy a book, and I'm not saying that about this, but the first couple of chapters are shocking and well documented and very well written, surprisingly well written. Not surprising. Pat Buchanan's an articulate guy. I disagree with a lot of his positions, but I'm quite amazed by this book. So anyhow, what's going on in the Senate? The Republican Senate. This from the Associated Press, an article by Alan Fram. The Republican-led Senate ignored a White House veto threat Wednesday. Yeah, it's the day before yesterday's news, but I think this is worth bringing up. I didn't get to it yesterday. But it's one of these things that are kind of timeless because what it does is it highlights the fact that this White House has not vetoed any piece of legislation. George Bush has not vetoed a single piece of legislation since he became president. I may be wrong, but I think he might be the first president ever to do that. I mean, it's been a long, long time in my, you know, I don't recall any president not having vetoed any legislation in his entire presidency. My guess is that he's going to veto something before the election just to be able to say he did. But in any case, they threatened to block this spending bill. The White House threatened to veto it because the Democrats had put into the bill, and they did this in the House and they did this in the Senate, a provision that says that the Homeland Security Department cannot outsource the jobs of 1,100 immigration inspectors, immigration officers who screen applications for people to come into the country. Pat Leahy was actually the chief sponsor of the provision, the senator from Vermont, the People's Republic of Vermont. And he said this provision was aimed at preventing Bush from replacing 1,100 immigration officers who screen applications and perform criminal background checks. They try to weed out the terrorists, Leahy said. And the cons are saying, well, you know, let's just give those jobs to a private corporation. And the private corporation can hire somebody in Pakistan to do it. Maybe hire somebody in Afghanistan to do it. Yeah. It's a stretch, but do you really want... See, this cuts to the core of, do you really want an organization that is more interested in making profits than in providing a product or service? By law, has to be providing a service or product to you. Or would you rather have it provided by a group that's only purpose is to provide that product or service? The fundamental distinction that I think most Americans who have been so swept up in the libertarian rhetoric that has been so prevalent since Reagan came along fail to get. And it really cuts right to the core of the issue. If there are some things that are not essential, in fact, there are many things. In fact, the majority of things are not essential. If the company that makes my tennis shoes decides to go, you know, shoddy on me, decides that they can make an extra 5 cent profit by having plastic eyelets instead of metal eyelets in the shoes or some silly thing like that, using a cheaper glue, and I discover that after 6 months the tennis shoes are disintegrating rather than, you know, a year or two, that's not a disaster. In fact, the marketplace will ultimately correct for that. I'll stop buying those tennis shoes. Or I'll make the conscious decision, if they're super cheap, that, hey, I can go through two pairs a year for the price of one pair of expensive ones, and that's a trade-out I'm willing to make. I mean, these are consumer decisions. This is how the marketplace is supposed to work. And that's, you know, the appropriate context in which for-profit corporations operate. And having run seven of them in my life, I'll tell you, that's fine with me. I've also run nonprofits. I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely emotionally disturbed children in New Hampshire. It's called the New England Salem Children's Trust. It's still there. I ran the program from 1978 to 1983. And the state of New Hampshire, as do most states in the country, said the care of our children, the care of children in the custody of the state, is a sufficiently important issue that we're not going to allow a corporation whose first goal is making profit to take it on. Only nonprofit organizations can do it, because nobody can make out like a bandit with a nonprofit organization. And traditionally what we have done in the United States is and every other country does as well, is we have said there are some things that are really important. The care of our children, the quality of our water, whether our air is fit to breathe, the quality and nature of our police services and our fire services, our education of our young, whether our food is safe, whether our drugs are safe and effective and efficacious, that there are some things that are so important that we can't let the profit motive, we can't allow the possibility that the profit motive is going to get in there and possibly cause harm to us by virtue of these things. So only two kinds of agencies will be allowed to handle these things. One, a nonprofit corporation, or two, a government agency. In both cases, there's no multimillion dollar salaries, there's no CEO making hundreds of millions a year, there's no, you know, jets with gold-plated laboratories, there's no big corporate headquarters, there's no lavish trips to the Bahamas, because they're fully accountable. They're totally transparent. And their primary purpose is just to do one thing, to provide that service. And Homeland Security, in my opinion, is one of those things. Now, the cons want to outsource Homeland Security and say, no, we'll let for-profit corporations handle it. I think that's a huge mistake. And so did the majority of the Senate, including a bunch of Republican senators. God bless them. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Washington, D.C., a funny little town. The further you look into it, the further things stick out.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Point in case. We were talking about the Republican-led Senate ignored a White House veto threat Wednesday and voted to block President Bush from handing some Homeland Security Department jobs to private companies. And this was the work of weeding out terrorists. So the White House, the GOP-led White House, wants to outsource this. And five Republicans,
Five Republicans voted against this, or voted with the Democrats to defy George Bush. It was Olympia Snow, Susan Collins of Maine, Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, Christopher Bond of Missouri, and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. Both Bond and Specter up for re-election this year. And this was actually the same issue that Max Cleland, the reason why Max Cleland voted against the original Department of Homeland Security bill was because it had a provision in it that would allow the Department of Homeland Security to get around the requirement that the employees of the federal government have union protections, that they have union representation, that, you know, therefore if they're getting trashed in some way or if there's whistleblower problems or whatever, that there's somebody with them. They'd rather have it, no, every employee is on his own. Sorry, guys. And Max Cleland said, that's not right. He's all in favor of Homeland Security, but, you know, you can't say that we're going to outsource these jobs, we're going to hand them off to private corporations, or that we're just going to strip the workers of union protections and have them be at-will employees. It's too important. This stuff is too important. And for that, Saxby Chambliss ran ads, Max Cleland and Osama bin Laden, and, you know, saying this guy's not patriotic, right? Max Cleland, the guy who left three limbs in Vietnam. Anyhow, case in point about, you know, things that are important. Charleston, West Virginia. The DuPont Company, this is an AP story by Lawrence Messina. The DuPont Company agreed to pay as much as $343 million. This was yesterday, to settle allegations that the chemical giant contaminated drinking water in West Virginia and Ohio with a chemical that is one of the main ingredients in Teflon. This chemical, by the way, it's called C8, has been used for over 50 years, and nobody has yet bothered to find out whether it causes cancer in humans. Now, you know, it's... As I have said many times, I have nothing wrong with people making a living, and I have no problem. There's nothing wrong with people making a living, and I have no problem with corporations operating on a for-profit basis. And we the people have an obligation to protect ourselves. And that obligation to protect ourselves we exercise through something we call government. We decided to create an environmental protection agency because we wanted our environment clean. And we didn't want people like Dow, or DuPont rather, dumping stuff like this in our air and water. This follows a July report by the EPA alleging Dow failed to properly report the discovery of C8 in drinking water near the Washington Works and in the blood of pregnant employees at the plant. What was DuPont's defense? That they had no legal obligation to provide information about C8 releases. In other words, we don't have to tell you that we are poisoning you unless you pass a law that says we have to tell you that. What's wrong with this picture? And this is what, and the ability, this is the core of tort reform. Now you've got the Republicans saying, you know, we got to have tort reform so that people can't sue corporations anymore. This came out as a result of 60,000 residents in Parkersburg, West Virginia, suing the DuPont Company. If they hadn't had a trial lawyer defending them, we would have never known, they would have never known that they were being poisoned potentially by this chemical. And Dow, of course, would not have had to pay $343 million, which would be make Dow happy and make maybe some people dead. But the, you know, tort reform? No, I don't think so either. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
As the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passes the 1,000 mark, the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions sent a letter to the Iraqi Prime Minister yesterday condemning the wave of hostage-taking and killing of migrant workers. The number of foreign workers killed in Iraq since March 2003 jumped at the end of August following the videotaped killing of 12 Nepalese and 3 Turkish workers. In addition, recent kidnappings of 2 Italian foreign relief workers were also condemned by the organization and has led many aid groups to consider pulling out. Earlier this month, 7 truck drivers from the countries of India, Kenya, and Egypt were released by their captors, but only after their employer paid a ransom the equivalent of $500,000. In the letter, the ICFTU said that more than 20 workers are currently being held hostage, and the group has called upon the Iraqi government to provide better security for workers of all nationalities.
1,500 unionized federal government workers scored a major victory on Wednesday with an amendment halting the outsourcing of immigration processing work to private companies. The amendment was added to a $32 billion Department of Homeland Security financing measure by just 2 votes, with 5 Republicans supporting the Democrats. Charles Showalter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, AFGE, says there's been trouble with private companies who've been entrusted with screening immigration applications.
Unfortunately, every time we privatize jobs within the Department of Homeland Security, we run into major problems. Out in California, when a contractor ran behind, they shredded 90,000 applications for benefits within the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
George Bush has threatened to veto the entire funding measure, saying that privatization will improve customer service and save money.
Workers at a Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois, have until next Wednesday to volunteer for a severance package, or they could face layoffs. The automaker intends to cut the factory's second shift and lay off about 1,200 workers on September 24th. The severance package will pay 80% of the volunteer's salary for up to 70 weeks. Remaining layoffs will be determined by seniority. The Japanese company has been facing a 36% decrease in worldwide sales. The Illinois plant is Mitsubishi's only U.S. plant. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It pays to be a political contributor. According to United for a Fair Economy, CEOs of the 69 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay increase by 52% in 2003. Also, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either Bush or Kerry earned an average of $15.2 million in 2003, 88% more than the average large company CEO.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. 26 and a half, actually. A study of thousands of... Speaking of tort reform. Speaking of the idea that you and I, individual citizens, should not have the power to sue large corporations because it might cost them money. It might cause them embarrassment. It might save our lives. But no, the cons don't want you to have tort reform. I mean, don't want you to have the ability to sue. They want to have tort reform. Let's change the laws. So it's very difficult. Right now, it's moderately difficult to sue a big corporation. Let's make it extremely difficult. Let's reform those nasty tort laws. You know what a tort is? No, it's not those things in the bakery. I mean, it is, but it, you know. A tort is a breach of the law, a violation of the law, a crime. Not a Joe shot John kind of crime. But so let's reform these laws that have to do with corporate crimes. I'm sure a lawyer is going to call now. at 1-866-889-8894 and clue me into the correct definition of a tort. I think I'm close, though. Anyhow, a study of thousands of federal court cases, that's what it is, really, has found that judges appointed by President Bush are the most conservative on record in the areas of civil rights and civil liberties. This, an article by Jeff Franks from Reuters. And this is a fascinating and scary little bit of information. The group that was put together to study this, University of Houston political scientist Robert Karp, along with Kenneth Manning at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth and Robert Stidham from Appalachian State University, they looked at 70,000 cases that ran through the various federal courts around the country and categorized them as liberal or conservative based on case content. In civil rights and civil liberty cases, for example, if it was a pro-free speech ruling, one that enhanced the free speech rights of citizens, it was considered a liberal judgment. If it was one that diminished the free speech rights of citizens, it was considered a conservative ruling. If it enhanced the right of privacy, it was considered liberal. If it diminished the right of privacy and gave more power to the state, it was considered conservative. Ironically, by the way, Barry Goldwater would have disagreed with these definitions, but the definitions of these words have changed since his day. Anyhow, the Bush judges made liberal decisions only 26.5% of the time. Compare that to appointees of Richard Nixon, who made liberal decisions 37% of the time. Appointees of Ronald Reagan, who made liberal decisions 32% of the time, 32.3%, and 32.2% for appointees of George H.W. Bush. Those judges appointed by LBJ, Jimmy Carter, or Bill Clinton gave liberal rulings in 58%, 51% and 42% of the time, respectively. George W. Bush is the most conservative president that we have data for, says Karp. In civil cases and liberties cases, his judges were 25% more conservative than those of other Republicans. Cases favoring corporations over people, for example. If this guy gets elected, expect more of the same. Typically, a president appoints 15, 18, 20% of the judges in an eight-year term. Reagan appointed almost 50% of all the judges on the federal bench. And Bush, if he is elected this year, will certainly appoint at least three and probably four Supreme Court justices, reshaping federal law for at least a couple of generations, at least one, probably two generations. That, in my mind, when they say this is the most important election in our lifetimes, is right at the core of it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tony in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, Tony, what's up?
You are keep on spreading news and, like you said, rant on and long and often.
I'll do it.
Hypothetical, and I'm just and I'll take my ass off the air because I know you're about to get off the air. Do you think if Dub gets back, and it'll be a lame duck for years, will the car roll machine or the machinations of the car roll machine, will they still have to go ahead and lick the boot of the White House knowing that they will be in a lame duck legislative session, or they have to stop licking the boot of Bill Frist? And I'll take my...
Well, you know, Tony, you don't need to hop off. I mean, by this, what you're talking about is, do I think that the Congress... is
right.
going to continue. Well, yeah, I mean, actually, the House of Representatives, the leadership of the House, Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert, are in many regards more conservative, if you define conservative as being deeply in the pockets of and owing all of their allegiance to major corporations,
right.
are more conservative than George W. Bush.
Right.
And Bill Frist over in the Senate, I mean, here's a guy who made his family fortune, the tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars that his family made. I mean, his family's company, the company that his family sold a few years ago, just paid an $800 million fine for ripping people off. $800 million in fines. You know, Bill Frist, you know, he's sitting pretty. because of you know, changes in the law that allowed. See, it used to be all across the United States that only nonprofits could provide hospital services. And the cons came along during the Reagan era and said, "Well, let's change that and let for-profit companies get in." Bill Frist made a fortune buying up old, you know, county nonprofit hospitals and making them efficient. And squeezing blood out of you and me and making profit out of it. So, no, I don't think that these guys are going to start defying Bush. I think, if anything, they may even have more power. Well, no, they won't have more power if he gets elected. But
right, because some of them, I'm feeling, they're going to say, well, we got to stop sucking up to the new guy who's going to be in charge, wouldn't you say?
Well, no, I just don't think so, because I think they're all – see, this is the thing. Throughout most of the history of the United States, you've had an adversarial relationship between at least one of the houses of Congress and the presidency. You know, in other words, the president is a Democrat, the Senate might be Democratic, the House is Republican. The House is Democratic, the Senate is Republican, whatever. You know, that there's always a little dynamic tension there. And then you have the kind of situation that you described, where they'll just go for broke. But now you've got conservative Republicans in control of the Supreme Court. Those guys who control the Supreme Court, the Rehnquist Five, put into place George Bush in the White House. They've got control of the White House. They've got control of the House. And with Tom DeLay's redistricting in Texas, and they did the same thing in Colorado, and they're doing it in several other states, making sure that those districts, those Republican districts, they added some 20-odd seats to the, you know, Republican seats, that they're not going to lose control of the House, and they've got control of the Senate. In large part, in my opinion, because of a rigged election in Georgia, but that's a whole other argument. But this is not something, I mean, all three branches of government, all four pieces of those three branches of government are under the control of Republicans and have been for the majority of the Bush administration. And somehow Bush is trying to run like he's an outsider. Somehow, you know, he's talking about all this stuff he's going to do in the next 4 years. He could have done it. You know, why hasn't he done any of this stuff so far? Well, you know, because it sounds good. You know, let's reform, let's make better. But, you know, when you get right down to it, tough decisions have to be made. You've got to pay as you go and things like that. And they've been unwilling to make those decisions. And so anyhow, no, I don't see that happening.
Okay, well, you take care of that.
Okay.
Good luck on your new book.
Pardon?
I said good luck on your new book. Oh yes, I know what I'm saying. You actually took the words out of my mouth when you talk about what Buchanan stated, and I was hearing this on NPR when he said that the Conservative Party was taking over. And you educated us that 3 to 6 months ago.
Yeah, well, yeah. For 2 years, I've been saying that. It's on the air. Absolutely. Thank you, Tony.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Do good. It's the cons have been taken over by the ultra cons, there's this battle going on for the soul of conservatism. Forget the Republican Party. For the soul of who are the conservatives, between the libertarians, the Ayn Rand believers, the Alan Greenspan faction, Alan Green having been inducted into Ayn Rand's cult, the objectivist cult, in her apartment in the 1950s, who sometimes are mistaken as lefties because they think that drugs and prostitution should be decriminalized. But their core belief is that government should only perform the function of defense, that the government should only provide for an army and a police force, and essentially that's it. And get rid of the Department of Education, get rid of the Department of Environmental Protection Agency, get rid of Occupational Safety and Health, get rid of Department of Education, get government out of the education. You know, all these things that we have collected, they're even suggesting that we should not be collectively paying for our roads, that they should all be toll roads that are run by private corporations. Let's let private corporations run the country. There's the libertarian faction. That's their worldview. And then you've got the neocon bunch who are in favor of empire, who are saying we need to protect our strategic interests around the world. We're going to live on oil. And even if we don't, we've got allies that we've got to protect, blah, 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 blah. And therefore, we're going to proactively, preemptively take out any potential danger that we see to our. And in their language, they say things like, you know, this is what Roosevelt did in fighting World War II. No, I'm sorry. France was going down in flames. And as France was being attacked by the Germans, Roosevelt was giving a speech in which he said, we are going to stay out of this. And he was widely applauded. We didn't get into the war in Europe until essentially the last year of it. And only then as a result of being attacked at Pearl Harbor by Japan. We declared war on Germany after Germany declared war on us. We did not say, gee, this could be a gathering threat. Now, there were some people within the Democratic Party who thought we should. There was a loud argument going on in Congress at the time. And the Republicans were the party who were saying, don't go into World War II. In fact, right up until we went into World War II, the Republicans were saying, don't go into World War II. And many of them continued to say that. They thought that Roosevelt had engineered the whole thing at Pearl Harbor. You know, he did cut off the supply of oil by blockading the Straits of Malacca. He cut off the supply of oil from the Middle East to Japan, thus forcing Japan to attack us someplace. And, you know, most historians and scholars of the issue suggest that the reason that they took us by surprise by attacking us in Pearl Harbor in Hawaii is because we expected them to attack us where the fleet was in the South Pacific, blockading the Straits of Malacca, the area between Borneo and on the south and on the north, Indonesia and Malaysia. That water passage there that boats go through, tankers go through to get oil from the Middle East over to Japan. And apparently that's where we were expecting to be hit. And there are those who were saying, you know, and Roosevelt was expecting to get hit there, and he was going to use that as an excuse to get into the war. And he was going to do that because he wanted to grab power. This was the Republican conspiracy theory. And the Democrats were, of course, saying he's going to do that because he thinks that, if the Nazis take over the world, it's not going to be a good thing. They'll come and get us next. That debate is still going on. But anyhow, you've got the neocons who have taken essentially control of the White House. And you've got the libertarians who have essentially taken control of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And there is this battle for, you know, who's the real conservatives. And then there's the rest of us who just believe in, you know, a constitutionally limited democratic republic. The strange notion that the founders had that there is this thing called the commons that we collectively share, our air, our water, our public areas. This is why, you know, many of our states are called commonwealths. What is the wealth that we hold in common? And who should protect it? Who should care for it? Who should administer it? It should be us. It's ours. It at one point in time, it might have been pasture land, it was roads, it was schools, police departments, fire departments, the army. And we've expanded that over the years, and I think rightfully so. Because we have grown. We do, see, in a small town, and I can tell you from experience, I've lived in big cities, I've lived in small cities. And you know, we live right now in a town of fewer than 9,000 people here in central Vermont. And if there was a doctor in town who was committing malpractice, everybody would know about it. If there was a restaurant in town that was serving food that was contaminated, well, in fact, there was. Last year, everybody knew about it. Very quickly. I mean, you know, you can't keep secrets in a little town. And word spreads. Well, in that kind of an environment, you know, the libertarian ideal makes a little more sense. But what do you do when you get 100,000, 200,000 people, a million people in a community, 5-10 million people in a state? California, I think it's 30 million, 34 million. How do you take care, how do you make sure that a sociopath who is using the game of business to rip us off and potentially put our lives at risk doesn't continue doing that? When the community is so large that word of mouth just doesn't work anymore, well, then you have to create an agency that overlooks it. You just have to. And we have done that for self-defense. And it, in my opinion, it's every bit as important part of our self-defense as our army is. But the cons say, no, that's socialism. We shouldn't have that. I think not. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Workers sickened by exposure to radiation, asbestos, beryllium, and other toxic substances while they were manufacturing nuclear weapons at Department of Energy facilities might get faster compensation if a Senate amendment to a defense authorization bill is accepted by a House Senate conference committee. But the White House is against the Senate plan, which would move the DOE's program to the Department of Labor. More on the story from Kelly Ramon.
Over the last half century, the federal government has failed to take proper care of workers building its nuclear arsenal.
They produced plutonium pits and tritium and enriched uranium for use in the nuclear weapons program.
Richard Miller is a policy analyst for the Washington, D.C.-based Government Accountability Project.
The workers have largely been left to fend for themselves in a need-to-know environment. In many cases, the government or its contractors simply just kept workers in the dark. They didn't know what they were working with. They were poorly protected, and the first mission was to produce materials for the Cold War.
Under the Energy Employees Occupational Compensation Program Act, there are two routes to compensation for workers or their families: the Department of Labor or the Department of Energy. Miller says that labor, which compensates nuclear workers who have certain specified illnesses, does a reasonably good job. But Energy, which is supposed to provide assistance with state workers' compensation claims, has run its side of the program very poorly.
DOE has processed only about 4% of its claims. A mere 31 people out of 25,000 claimants have even been paid. And DOE has burned through over $95 million through the course of this poor performance.
Senate Republicans proposed transferring DOE's program to the Department of Labor, but the White House, backed by its friends in the House of Representatives, is opposed. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kelia Romar.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour here. Tom Hartman with you. The we have, this is just, it's time for our conservative alerts. Yes, indeed, folks. This is from conservativealerts.com. The erstwhile lookout. Here's the alert. Extreme left-wing organizations are having a hissy fit. It seems they really don't want to see democracy in action, say the conservatives here. There is a proposed constitutional amendment that is likely to come up for a vote shortly in the U.S. Senate. Now, let me just provide a little background. When George Herbert Walker Bush was president and running for re-election and not doing so well because the economy was in the tank, the Reagan recession was, you know, full blown, all that money he had borrowed 10-12 years earlier was starting to come due, the conservative economic policies were starting to decimate American business. We had seen the unionized workforce in the United States go from 25% when Reagan took power. It's down to 8% now. It was well into the plunge. And so what did George Herbert Walker Bush do? He just like George Bush today, when you say, George, we'd like to know who was buying those puts on American and United on 9/11, and or why, you know, why didn't the government radar track, or why did you sit in that classroom for? And the answer to all those questions is, we need a constitutional amendment to ban homosexual marriage. Well, in George Herbert Walker Bush's time, it was a constitutional amendment to ban flag burning. Remember that? You got to ban flag burning. This is a threat to the republic. Yeah, a country's going to go down in flames if this is allowed to happen. Well, we're back. There is a proposed constitutional amendment that is likely to come up for a vote shortly in the U.S. Senate authorizing Congress to prohibit flag burning. The amendment has already passed the U.S. House of Representatives by the required two-thirds majority. Far-left groups like the ACLU are going ballistic over this amendment, calling it dangerous and un-American. Yeah, free speech. Dangerous and un-American. What will they not stoop to? What diversion will they not try and trot out? But they're at it again. They're at it again. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it. Great job, Ira. Thanks to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the world, to Ben for our archives, and Mike Toth. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Do appreciate it. Great conversations today. Thanks to Jay for composing and producing and performing our music. And thanks to you for showing up. I do appreciate that. Without you, it wouldn't be a show. See you next Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix